This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This week, the House Republicans ended their investigation into Russia's meddling in the 2016 election. They concluded that there was no collusion between Trump's campaign and the Russians, and that Russia was not working to improve Trump's chances of winning the White House. We reached out to San Antonio Republican Congressman Will Hurd, who sits on the Intelligence Committee, to learn more about this development. He was unable to join us. We also reached out to Joaquin Castro, a Democrat who sits on that committee, about these developments and other news concerning the White House, the State Department, Russia, and North Korea.
The Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee suddenly this week closed the investigation into the Russian meddling into the 2016 presidential election. This is supposed to be a bipartisan committee. Did you know this was going to happen?
Well, we've been hearing for a few weeks, and maybe even a month, that Republicans in charge of the committee were thinking about closing up the investigation, but we didn't know if that was in fact the case or if it was just a rumor. And when it was actually announced, we were pretty much blindsided that they were actually going to close it up and had already written a draft report. And it really is a kind of betrayal of the public trust. And the reason I say that is because there were so many investigative leads and paths that we could have followed, things that witnesses came in and told us that we needed to follow up on or verify, documents we received that we needed to go verify. And none of that will be done, it looks like, at least on the House side. The Senate investigation continues and Robert Mueller's investigation continues, but the House investigation, it looks like, is coming to a close.
So there are certain individuals that y'all never even got to interview, Rance Priebus, who was the head of the Republican Party at the time, and then he became the chief of staff, and then Kellyanne Conway, she was a campaign chairperson and a spokesperson, Stephen Miller, who was a controversial advisor to the president, and Sean Spicer, who was, people know him as a communications expert for the White House. None of them testified. I mean, how do you know what happened if you didn't talk to these key four people? Five people.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk to a lot of key people in the Trump administration. And also, we didn't get to talk to the people who are under indictment now, people like George Papadopoulos, Michael Flynn, and others. But really, you know, there's three major areas of concern, I think, for the administration and legal exposure, potentially. And the first one, of course, is collusion. The second one is money laundering. And the third one is obstruction of justice. And there were witnesses who came in and basically gave us pieces of each of those, but without going and issuing subpoenas for things like phone records and travel records and bank records, it becomes very hard to put the whole puzzle together, even though you have some of the pieces. And I suspect that Bob Mueller is going to do a lot of that himself with his team.
Yeah, Bob Mueller, who's leading the special investigation. But so his investigation as a special prosecutor, they do it in a way that it is not public, and they go look for indictments, but frequently people will plead guilty. There's never public trial. So much of the story never gets told. So did you see, as the role of the House Intelligence Committee was really to try to figure out the narrative to help the public understand what happened?
Yeah, I mean, part of the tragedy here is that there is a special counsel who will prosecute anyone who did anything wrong. However, the job of the special prosecutor is not to explain to the American people what happened or to make recommendations about how we prevent it in the future. That's the job of Congress. That was the purpose of our investigation. And our investigation, by the same token, was not to go prosecute anybody. But without doing a full investigation, the American people are going to lose out, I think, on getting the full story first, but also on fully understanding what happened and how you prevent it in the coming years.
Well, there is this 150-page draft report that was put out by Representative Devin Nunes. What's in there?
Well, they basically lay out the case that they found no evidence of collusion. And they also deny the Intelligence Committee's findings that the Russians tried to help Donald Trump and his campaign. And I strongly disagree with the conclusions of the draft report. We have seen evidence of collusion, both in the private settings and in the public settings. Remember, when we started this investigation, the Trump campaign was saying that nobody had anything to do with anybody from Russia, any Russian operatives. And then eventually they were basically caught red-handed that they had set up a June 2016 meeting with the highest members of the Trump team, including Donald Trump Jr., and Russian spies. Roger Stone, who's a longtime confidant to the president for decades and one of the first employees of the Trump campaign, had advanced knowledge of the Clinton email dump that was coming. You know, so yeah, there were these instances. George Papadopoulos, who, of course, now has been indicted and is cooperating, he also met with the professor, who was a Russian, that basically said that Russia had these emails about the Clinton campaign. So there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of collusion, a lot of work between Russian operatives and people in the Trump campaign.
Devin Nunes, he had recused himself of this investigation at one point, but then he didn't actually do that. I mean, what is the story behind Representative Devin Nunes and his behavior over the entire investigation? I mean, hasn't that become a source of concern?
Yeah, Devin Nunes, to say the least, has conducted himself in a curious way. He basically at some point decided to make his career a sacrifice fly for Donald Trump. And he has functioned as a kind of protector of the president on the committee. His recusal, for the most part, was in name only. I mean, yes, he didn't attend the witness interviews, but I'm sure he probably read some of the transcripts. He was still issuing orders to committee staff to communicate with certain persons. He was refusing to issue subpoenas on the records that I talked about that we needed to see. So he still had a very heavy hand in the investigation.
He was working back and forth with the White House. He was having communications with the president about the investigation during the investigation that was looking at the activities of the White House. That in and of itself would seem like something that would disqualify someone from that role.
Yeah, I think the ultimate responsibility and failure when you think about Devin Nunes lies with Speaker Paul Ryan. The Speaker had the power to remove Devin Nunes from the chairmanship and put Mike Conway, a fellow Texan, in there and allow him to really run the Russia investigation by himself without interference from Devin Nunes. But that created a lot of tension among Republicans on the committee. Forget about the Democrats. There was a lot of tension between Mike Conway and Devin Nunes because Mike and Trey Gowdy and Congressman Rooney from Florida, the three of them were supposed to be in charge of the Russia investigation, and Devin was staying on to chair the other stuff. But Devin Nunes never took his hand out of that Russia investigation.
The decision by the Republican members of the House Intelligence Committee to release this draft report and just basically fold up the pup tent on the investigation, was that a decision of the entire Republican side of the committee, or was that just Devin Nunes?
I don't know whether they all took a vote at some point on doing this, but I haven't heard any of the Republicans on the committee speak out and say that they disagree with closing up the investigation.
Should we know that thing? Is that part of the transparency? Like, well, how did you reach this decision?
Yeah, what will happen at this point is that when the report is no longer a draft report, when it's in final form, I'm certain that there will be a vote on the committee on releasing that report. And at that point, people will have to vote yes or no on whether they endorse those findings.
But as you said, Representative Trey Gowdy has expressed some of his concerns. He says he's contradicted Nunes in saying that there is definitely evidence that somehow the Russians did not like Hillary Clinton and did not want her to be president. And, look at Representative Trey Gowdy's background, and he was no fan of Hillary Clinton either, especially how he, held those hearings about Benghazi so aggressively.
No, you're right. Trey Gowdy at one point was chairing the Benghazi committee, the very famous Benghazi investigation. And he also sits on the Intelligence Committee, and he said that he disagreed with the committee, the Republican report, that in fact the Russians were trying to undermine Hillary Clinton's campaign. And, the whole thing started as a way for Russia to basically create chaos within the American political system. But as Donald Trump became more successful, their focus then also became on helping him win, because they preferred him much more to Hillary Clinton. They absolutely didn't want Hillary Clinton to be the next president of the United States.
So what are the Democrats, your fellow Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee, going to be doing in response to the wrapping up of this investigation?
Well, we're still going to, within our limitations, because we are in the minority on the committee, we're still going to continue to try to investigate as much as we can. We're inviting people with information that may be useful to the committee to come forward and offer that to us. We will see next January if the composition of the Congress does change. We'll have to take stock of where the investigation is at that point, how far along the Senate and Bob Mueller have gotten, and make a decision about whether to resume it or not.
If there is a further investigation into this investigation as to what happened and why did the Republican side decide to end the investigation prematurely, is that grounds for obstruction of justice charges, a cover-up?
Well, I mean, that's a very high bar, obviously, to meet. Congress has wide latitude on its investigations. But if it's, if it comes out at some point that there was substantial and significant evidence that the committee did not present to all committee members, including Democrats, then, we'll have to consider that.
What does this mean for the Congress's reputation to be able to investigate issues like this? This is not supposed to happen with this committee, right?
That's right. The Intelligence Committee, for the longest time, has been as above politics as you can get in a partisan body. My other committee is the Foreign Affairs Committee, which is pretty much the same way. Unlike some committees, for example, if you go to the Judiciary Committee and you listen to one of their committee hearings, or the Financial Services Committee, or Energy and Commerce, every week that they have committee meetings, you're going to witness a very strong, sometimes acrimonious back and forth between the two sides. But the Intelligence Committee had not been that. And there's an open question about whether we can get back to the kind of bipartisanship that has been so productive for this committee and really for the American people.
So you mentioned Russia. There's a lot of activity with the Russia question right now. Number one, we'll talk about the firing of former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. That happened with a tweet just yesterday morning. So there's so many different areas to talk about that. But what do you think of just about that process and what that says about how we run our, the cabinet, that any member can be fired with a tweet?
Well, Rex Tillerson has been an accomplished businessman from Texas. He headed up Exxon for so many years. And for the president not to give him the courtesy of a phone call, at least, I mean, much less a in-face visit, which is what he should have done, but to at least call the man and tell him that he was going to let him go is quite disrespectful. This is somebody who left. He didn't have to leave Exxon. I mean, he was, basically king of the energy industry there and decided to go serve the president. And to get treated that way is just, I just don't understand that at all.
But for people from the outside looking at the United States government and they're wondering about stability, volatility, dependability, being able to carry out promises, and to see that everything is going to be run through a Twitter stream, and those are things that are important. The economies depend on that type of stability.
Right. I mean, there's been, under this administration, this constant administrative chaos and turnover and tumult. And when the president makes major announcements and decisions on Twitter, he's often airing our dirty laundry to our allies, to our adversaries, to everyone. And I think it weakens the United States' hand around the world. It makes this country look more unstable. And so it really doesn't help our standing in the world. And it also undermines the confidence of Americans more in their government.
So why was Secretary of State Rex Tillerson fired?
I think the President of the United States needs to answer why he fired Rex Tillerson. I can only speculate, as can others, but the President and the Secretary of State were never on the same page. I thought that the Secretary of State's approach to world affairs was much more sober and responsible, even though I disagreed with him on several things, was much more sober and responsible than what we see coming out of President Trump in the White House. And I really think that the president doesn't want somebody who is thoughtful necessarily and has their own mind. He wants a yes man. He wants somebody who he's going to be able to give an order to unconditionally and they go do it. Well, that's great if, you know, if you're a boss and you want people who are just going to do whatever you want. I understand. But for the American people and for the world, that's not the best thing. That's not the best arrangement, to not have anybody in there who's going to challenge the president, who's going to question the president, and make the president think twice sometimes about this, the decisions that he's making.
With Rex Tillerson, I mean, he basically was accused of hollowing out the State Department, a lot of positions
right.
unfilled. He was not aggressive in trying to hold Russia accountable for the interference and other things that Russia has been doing. In a lot of ways, Rex, a lot of people have said that Rex Tillerson is probably going to go down as the worst Secretary of State in U.S. history. We'll have to see what Mike Pompeo does in that area. But, you know, will it make a difference that we're going to change out Secretary of States? I mean, how much did Rex Tillerson actually stand up to Donald Trump other than calling him a moron?
And look, I don't expect that Mike Pompeo is going to stand up to Donald Trump. He's not exhibited that at the CIA, really. Donald Trump is not hiring Mike Pompeo to be Secretary of State to talk back to him. He's hiring him to just go do what he says. And I think the challenge for Rex Tillerson, first, that he'd never been in any kind of diplomatic post before or worked in statecraft before. So that by itself, it would be like if you put me as a CEO of an energy company, and I've never done it before. You know, that's going to be a challenge, and it's going to take you years to really get good at what you're doing. He obviously never got that chance to be there long enough to get good at it. And also, a Secretary of State or anybody in the government is still constrained by the president they work for. And when you've got a president who's heavy-handed and whose approach is my way or the highway with very little discussion, it's going to be tough for anybody.
The Secretary of State's office has sometimes been described as the Secretary of Peace. This is the agency in the government that exercises soft power and tries to prevent the eruption of hot wars that we pay for with the blood and treasure of the United States, you know, our finest individuals that we have. By weakening the Secretary of State's office, how are you concerned by that?
Well, this comes at a very bad time in the affairs of the world, really, because in May, the United States is supposed to negotiate with South Korea and North Korea on the denuclearization of North Korea. So Mike Pompeo, the new proposed Secretary of State, still has to go through confirmation hearings. So we're barely going to have a new Secretary of State. We don't have an ambassador installed in South Korea, which is another big problem. And so you're missing a lot of the machinery or infrastructure for diplomacy. And the stakes are very high because based on everything that I've heard in private and public settings, classified and unclassified, I believe that this administration wants to go to war with North Korea. They want to go to war with North Korea. So if the negotiations fail, then I would be surprised if President Trump does not go to war with North Korea.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're speaking with San Antonio Congressman Joaquin Castro about news from the White House and the investigation into Russia's interference into the 2016 election. There's more when we come back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. I spoke this morning with San Antonio Congressman Joaquin Castro about major developments in Washington, D.C., including what's going on at the White House and the Secretary of State's office. Let's get back to the interview. Now, President Trump has said that he's actually going to have a sit-down meeting with North Korea. He pronounced that he was able to arrange this meeting as a great act of diplomacy, and his hardline position brought Kim to the table and declared that this was progress.
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, the policy on North Korea had been, after the failure of the six-party talks in the mid-2000s, the policy of the United States was mostly isolation. And when President Obama, you know, tried to engage a bit, there was a big roarback about, you know, not doing that. And so our policy was basically isolation. And in the meantime, North Korea was developing their nuclear capabilities. Well, it looks as though they got to the point in that development where they could actually fire a nuclear weapon at least short range. So they could reach Japan. They could reach South Korea. The question is, how far can those missiles go? And now the president has an opportunity. And I gave the president a lot of credit when he and Nikki Haley went to the UN and got the United Nations to impose the strongest sanctions on North Korea that North Korea has ever dealt with. And I said at the time that rather than going on Twitter and or getting into, you know, juvenile fights with Kim Jong-un, that they ought to use that to pressure North Korea to the table. Well, now that it looks like North Korea is coming to the table, this president has to make sure that he's prepared and the administration is prepared for those negotiations. This nuclear negotiation is not something that a president should go just wing it. You know, he's got to get ready for it. And it's going to take a level of preparation that we haven't seen from this president or this administration.
If this sit-down talk never even actually happens, and there are people in the administration who say this has less than the 20% chance of actually happening now, they're trying to walk away from this. But just saying that we're going to do it, how does that help North Korea? How does that help legitimize the regime?
Well, certainly there's internal politics with Kim Jong-un and everything he's trying to do to secure his standing in North Korea. You know, it's also part of the reason that he's had his uncle and his half-brother killed, because he's paranoid about anybody challenging his leadership. So to the extent that he can use this inside his own country to make it look like North Korea is, you know, on parallel standing with the United States, he's certainly going to do that.
To legitimize North Korea as an equal to the United States with these, we're going to do these talks, that is also strengthens them and makes them more dangerous, some say.
No, it certainly does strengthen North Korea's hand. The fact that the United States is now going to go sit down with them in the bilateral or trilateral negotiations here certainly strengthens the hand of Kim Jong-un.
It seems like if President Barack Obama wanted to sit down with Kim Jong-un, he could have done it at any time that he wanted to. I mean, this is being able to say, I'm going to sit down with the head of the strongman of North Korea, the dictator, is not exactly a big feat. It's just actually giving them what they want.
Yeah, I think in part it is what Kim Jong-un wants. But there's also a larger purpose here, and the larger purpose is to accomplish denuclearization in North Korea. So in the end, if we can get an agreement for denuclearization that North Korea will stick by and that can be enforced, then it will have been worth it.
Russia is accused of a chemical attack on a former spy on soil of England, in Great Britain. How provocative of an act is that?
The fact that Russia used a military-grade nerve agent to kill two people, try to kill two people.
Yes, they're still alive, but they're hanging on.
Right. And one of the main person they were after was a former Russian spy who they believe turned over and gave information to the British. But the fact that they would do it on foreign soil in Britain and do it in a way that not only may have taken out the targets, but also injured British people is very irresponsible. And I've seen the reaction. I haven't had a chance to read all the information this morning, but I understand that some Russian diplomats are going to be expelled from Britain. And I think that's an appropriate and strong response. Russia has to understand that you can't go into another country and kill people and do something that basically threatens the lives of so many other people around there.
So this is probably the most active, volatile, dangerous chemical agent that the world has ever seen, probably applied in some sort of We're not sure how exactly they made contact with these two people to apply this agent to them, but others may have been put in danger. Is this an act of war?
Well, ultimately, Britain's going to have to decide, you know, because they know all the details of what happened. We still haven't seen many of the details about, you know, whether they consider an act of war or not. But the fact that it affected not just Russians, but also Brits, I think is extremely troubling.
Borders on terrorism?
And the fact that the President of the United States has not weighed in on it, at least as far as I've seen yet, is also irresponsible. The President should have condemned Russia's actions right away. Not to do so encourages them to do similar things in the United States. And there have been mysterious incidents that have occurred here with Russian expats. But to not condemn them, to not say a word about this action, I think encourages Russia to do that in other places. It means what they're going to take from that is that nobody is going to hold our feet to the fire.
Well, President Trump said something along the lines that we're going to wait and see what the facts are. And if we agree with the facts, then we will take action. But he didn't directly criticize Russia, as he has yet to do in any form or fashion in his role as president.
Yeah, the president's reluctance to say anything even close to negative or challenging of Vladimir Putin is absolutely astounding. And, you know, it's also peculiar that Tillerson called Russia out, and the next day he's fired. Rex Tillerson said something negative about Russia, and the very next day he's fired.
There are two other people in the White House right now. We're wondering about their future: John Kelly, Chief of Staff, and H.R. McMaster, who's the National Security Advisor. We know now that things are very volatile. Things are very stormy in the White House. And we're wondering, what does it mean that these other two major players are on weak standing?
I wouldn't be surprised if General Kelly and General McMaster don't last too much longer. Perhaps they will. But I was part of the American delegation a few weeks ago at the Munich Security Conference when General McMaster made his comments and about Russia and its interference in the elections, and then faced blowback on Twitter from the President of the United States. So again, this is a president that demands fealty. This is a president that demands that people follow his exact word and not stand out publicly and contradict him at all, even when, you know, it's clear that he's either wrong or is badly off target on something.
Today we're seeing walkouts across the United States from students concerned about gun violence. Any thoughts or words for them?
I'm encouraged by this generation of Americans coming up and their strength and their courage and their activism. And I think it says great things about the future of this country.
All right, we'll leave it right there. Representative Castro, great talking with you.
Good talking to you, man.
That was San Antonio Congressman Joaquin Castro, who sits on the House Intelligence Committee. We also reached out to Congressman Will Hurd of San Antonio, a Republican, to get his take on things. His office said that he was unable to join us due to his schedule. We're taking a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Contemporary Art Month. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned.